morning, everybody. Today is Monday, April 25th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. And it sure is a Monday. It is 49 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Thursday and Friday? I titled the show Biosensors, Behavioral Patterns, Barcoding Cells, Smart Pills, and Dust. We spent a lot of time looking at the Brain Project and different facets of brain discoveries that they've been making left and right. We just found out that as part of the Brain Project, the National Institute of Health, DARPA, National Science Foundation, the FDA I just saw yesterday, and a bunch of other federal agencies are all funding research into things that might surprise you. The National Institute of Health is actually funding projects on mass brain monitoring, and we read a story that had also talked about the brain monitoring operation centers. It was pretty frightening. Once they are able to have you swallow a smart pill, we heard Regina Duggan talking about our future superpowers and that healthcare company called Proteus that is making the smart pills that you can then swallow and give real-time information, including whether or not you took your medication and some of your biostatistics direct via wireless to your doctor, making you, again, just one of the Internet of Things. And I want to continue on that vein, looking at the Internet of Things, looking at smart dust, which is kind of where we left it. On Thursday, we have Michio Kaku talk about all the advances and some of the future timelines and things that he sees on Friday. And it was a very good interview. If you missed it, it is up on YouTube. But the story where we left off on Thursday was titled Smart Dust May Become the Pinnacle Innovation of the Internet of Things. We've talked about the Internet of Things many times. It is pretty much putting a biosensor or, well, not a biosensor, but it could be a sensor. But more likely than not now, it'll be a biosensor of some kind with a wireless connection and an IaaS server to get to the Internet. It's about all it needs. They can make them now very minuscule. They can make them to the size where they can even get them into your cells. And we're going to get to that today. But, you know, we've discussed the fact that everything is going to be part of this surveillance grid that they are affectionately calling the Internet of Things. It will be your coffee cup and your alarm clock and your refrigerator and your washing machine and your car and your front door lock and your thermostats, the security cameras in your house. Your blood cells, your eyeballs, I don't know. They're going to try to monitor every device, and the devices will include you, me, and our appliances. So anyway, Smart Dust may become the pinnacle innovation of the Internet of Things. This is a little investment publication here. Gartner still believes that dust will eventually be smart. The reason why we started talking about smart dust is because, you know, it's interesting that back when I was doing all of my tech stuff in the early days, back in the mid to late 90s, you know, I was the lead HP tech for a couple of years there. So I was the go-to person in this large corporation for anything that they had issues with for HP. And in exchange for that, we got some pretty hefty training from the manufacturer and got all of our engineering certifications. And I was also even service authorized for Hewlett-Packard for their servers and desktops, so it was pretty neat. But one of the things that we also did, though, is when you were an inside vendor representative, when you were the key go-to person, you knew about a lot of projects that they were working on. And HP was one of those companies that had been working long and hard on smart dust. So I knew all about smart dust back in the 90s. Now, you could still do searches, and, you know, it never really came out as to, quote-unquote, who was the developer. But I'll tell you, HP was very in the middle of it, and they spent lots of money and spent, like, 20 years on it. I remember Carly Fiorina, one of the debates, coming out and saying very distinctly that while she was at HP, she worked very closely with the Department of Defense. And I don't know if anyone caught that, but I did, because guess who was the CEO of HP when I did all my HP stuff? Oh, Carly Fiorina. So that caught my attention, because I remember thinking to myself, I mean, I know about their server line. They had a high-end, and they might still, I don't know, but they had a high-end HP UX server line that were called the HP 9000s back in those days. And those were military-grade, Department of Defense, high-end, government institutional, quote-unquote, supercomputers back in those days. So Microsystem had a division that was very similar to that, the Sun. No, they weren't the Sparks. I don't remember what they were. Maybe they were the Sparks. I don't know. But Sun and HP both had their two divisions, IBM as well, that typically went to high-end federal and military-grade divisions within the government. But I never, ever remember Smart Dust ever being floated as part of the DOD. I never remember hearing about DARPA back in those days. So what's interesting is this story kind of adds a little bit onto that, and they don't mention HP, but they talk about the development in the 90s. So anyway, here we go. Gartner. So Gartner is that tech investment future gauging firm that you'll pay. Lots of companies pay lots of money to Gartner to get their future vision of the next, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year plan for investing and that type of thing. So Gartner still believes, and this is as of August of 2015, that smart dust will, that of dust will eventually be smart. Cloud of nanoparticles washes through a field and tiny sensors gather on variants in air currents, moistures and temperatures. The pH balance of the water in the soil is constantly monitored, and the growth rate, health, and sustainability of the crop is continually assessed. The dust of nanoparticles, and some may call it smart dust, can detect invaders in the field, be it a disease infecting the crop, small animals, or humans, and dispatch another cloud of dust to combat the threat. Now that sounds like something that nightmares are made out of. And you know, they have all this automated farming now that they're rolling out. Smart farming. And they have all these biosensors that they're rolling out. It's all going to be in the name of your security, keeping you safe, keeping you healthy, and making us all a part of the Internet of Things. See, smart dust is the shortcut. We have nanotechnology that in the future, and it looks like it's going to be in the not-too-distant future, we'll be monitoring and repairing within your body. We have nanotechnology that will be doing test desktop manufacturing. We've looked at some of that. But the kind of interim that I think in my educated opinion, at least about smart dust and what I know from the last 20 years, I would have to, if I were a betting woman, I would have to roll those dice and probably put some pretty good chances on the fact that they have been letting this genie out of the bottle for quite a while now and testing things. And I mentioned this the other day when I first started doing radio in 2011. It was one of the first things I talked about on air. Well, Fukushima was number one, but on a night show where I wasn't talking exclusively about Fukushima, I had a conversation about smart dust. I think it was on that WTF show. And about how I was pretty sure that they were spraying it in the sky to see what kind of results
they could achieve and what kind of displacement. I know they'd been talking about it and trying to figure out whether or not it was going to be too heavy to stay airborne. I saw some stuff also for meteorology and storm prediction and seeing the internals of storms. They've been using some sort of these little tiny sensors that they can let loose in the jet streams. And I saw in here they just said something about that, about variant air currents, moisture, and temperature. So, I mean, you know that they've been doing all that stuff. They just aren't telling you how they're doing it. You know, it's all this wonderful mumbo-jumbo magic new technology coming, but no one's going to come out and say, well, we're using smart dust, huh? We're using nanobots. You know, but it's where we've gotten to now. Miniaturized sensors, and they're getting even smaller. All right, so let's continue in this story. Smart dust may sound like an idea out of science fiction, you think, but the technology behind the concept is very real. In fact, DARPA started doing tests on the concept of smart dust in the early 1990s. And now, you know, here's the thing. I think I mentioned this the other day, but let's review. You know, we see now time and time again how, now that we've become very familiar with DARPA and their modus operandi, how DARPA does things. They come up with some cockamamie idea. They put out an RFP, request for proposal. They post it out on FBO.gov. And if you want to have a hair-raising experience, go out to FBO.gov, Federal Business Opportunities, and plug in one of your favorite agencies. My favorite happens to be DARPA, into the search engine. And that website is the federal website where it is required by law that any government institution, entity within the federal government has to post a request for proposal for everyone who wants to bid on a project to have a fair and open chance. Because they're utilizing taxpayer dollars, okay? So there has to be this level of transparency, and I know. Transparency, schmansparency, it's whatever they decide is transparent. And I can guarantee you that there's probably some butt slapping and rubbing going on, so some of this stuff isn't going to bid. But surprisingly enough, it's scary just to see the ones that are going to bid. And they're not going to give away the store, but they at least are going to give you a good overview as to what the project is going to entail, what kind of technology they're looking for you to try to propose to them, and what their end results are. So go out to FBO.gov on a rainy day when you're bored and plug in DARPA or, I don't know, the Air Force or whatever. I mean, it's unbelievable. Any federal agency that is getting a proposal from a corporate entity needs to put their posting out there. Anyway, smart dust may seem like an idea out of science fiction, but the technology behind the concept is very real. In fact, DARPA started doing tests on the concept of smart dust in the early 1990s. Oh, now I remember. I lost my train of thought there. So the reason that I brought that up about the FBO.gov is because that's the modus operandi. They post the RFP out there. All these companies come in and bid. They give them a chunk of change to go develop the technology. And when they develop the technology, then they spin it off into some little company that then goes public and they launch it on the unsuspecting. Well, I could guarantee you that some of the seeing HP working on smart dust back in the 90s probably, don't know for absolutely certain, but I will say probably, went something just like that. That there was an FBO. Well, FBO.gov did not exist back in the early 90s, but they still did it from a paper perspective. You got your weekly or monthly catalog of all of the ongoing projects you could bid on. And all it would have had to take was HP bidding to be the manufacturer, the producer of whatever they were requesting, in this case, the smart dust. And if they won that proposal because they came in low bid, well, then that's how it worked out. don't know, maybe we could dig that up one of these days, but I don't think it's really important to the conversation how they got there. Just that I know smart dust has been tinkered with since the 90s, and this article echoes what I already knew from the industry. Military tacticians could envision smart dust as some sort of advanced scout in theaters of war, while the agriculture industry could benefit in the scenario described above. Smart dust could also measure the health of water supplies or nuclear facilities or even large groups of people. Ding, ding, ding. Like I said, smart dust was not meant to be in your bloodstream, not nanobots. That comes later. This was the interim. This was to be able to put sensors. And I thought we read somewhere that HP project was trillions of sensors. Smart dust takes a variety of concepts that are now very familiar to technologists and attempts to shrink them down to create a swarm, ding ding, of sensors. You know, swarming is what it's all about. They want swarms to be able to bag and tag 24/7 with any type of sensory input. And this would do just that. The current basis for theories of creating smart dust is built on the idea of MEMS. You guys remember MEM wristers? We talked about those. Little tiny transistors that can do all kinds of fancy communication in a tiny little footprint. Familiar to technologists and attempts to shrink them down to create swarms of sensors that can perform a variety of tasks. And the current basis for theories of creating smart dust is built on the idea of MEMS, micro electromechanical systems, various types of sensor technology, RFID, laser communication, small cell batteries, and solar energy. In various shapes or forms, all this technology exists, just not in the nano size, wink, that will be necessary to make this dust truly smart. And if you think about it, smart dust would be the technological pinnacle of what we now think of as the Internet of Things. See, so like I said, it's not nano-sized yet, but look out, because it's exactly what they're working on doing. This is like the interim before we got to the sensing nano biosensors that could be anywhere, that are so small that we will never be able to see them. They can get into your body. They can cross the blood-brain barrier, be inside of every living organism, and give them a reading as to what's going on or what the ambient temperatures are, whatever. Cameras, eyes in the sky, microphones. If you think about it, smart dust would be the technological pinnacle of what we now think of as the Internet of Things. And when are we going to see the first real instances of smart dust? And they're talking like in production where they announce it. According to Gartner's annual hype cycle for emerging technologies, not for at least, they say, another 5 to 10 years. Well, maybe as in the commonplace that we're talking about smart dust everywhere. But like I said, it's already out there. They've been experimenting with it for 20 years. It's kind of moved now to even smaller sensors. And now we have Ray Kurzweil talking about immortality by 2020. And we're going to read that one today. It says the Gartner Hype Cycle is a yearly map of where current yearly trends and technology actually stand in various stages of development. The hype cycle has 5 distinct phases of development. The innovation trigger, the peak of inflated expectations. See, this is an investor tool. The trough of disillusionment, the slope of enlightenment, and the plateau of productivity. And you know, Kurzweil, who do we have Friday? Michio Kaku. It kind of talked about these things. In the last two tech booms and or busts that happens in regards to nanotechnology and the biotech market. You know, it happened in the 80s, and then it happened again in the 90s and the early 2000s, and it didn't quite take off. But he said, and I totally agree with him, that this time, this is not going to be a failure. There's already been billions, if not trillions of dollars in investments in biotechnology, in nanotechnology, in smart dust and biosensors and the Internet of Things. This isn't just coming out of the woodwork. This has been going on for a long time, and I really agree with him that this time is not going to be a false start. So anybody's a betting person and wants to invest in our own destruction of ourselves, I would say any type of bagging, tagging, mad science gun, mad stock would probably be quite profitable, as Rome burns. Gardner has a variety of hype cycles these days centered around various technologies and industries. Digital marketing, the Internet of Things, and automotive technologies all have their own distinctive hype cycles this year. And automotive technology, of course, is the self-driving car utilizing artificial intelligence that all the big boys are getting on, including Toyota, who's dumping $1 billion into their artificial intelligence center. Says, but the emerging technology hype cycle is always the best. Why? Because it is the first glimpse of science fiction becoming reality. And that is true. I've been following Gartner for a very long time. The first nod to the fact that something we once considered absolutely impossible has now the vague concept of touching our lives. And for the last couple years, smart dust has been at the far left side of the hype cycle, and that makes for a fascinating study. DARPA and RAND, which is RAND Research Corporation, started research on smart dust more than 20 years ago. Corporations have been formed to start building the capabilities. Corporations have been formed to start building the capabilities needed to create smart dust networks, which Dust Networks, I guess, was the name of the company, was acquired then by a company called Linear Networks in 2011. Holograms and volumetric displays, brain-computer interfaces, human augmentation, and quantum computing are all technologies on the upward slope of that hype cycle, and they have a basis in current reality. And they still might have a long time to go before they are affecting other people's lives. And think what you will. I don't know. We've been covering a lot on brain-computer interfaces, human augmentation, and now my dad and I have shown him some pretty neat stuff with the new touchable holograms and stuff this weekend. Technology has transcended the hype. If you read technology media, you know what the top hype trends are right now. Autonomous vehicles, the Internet of Things, machine learning, and wearables. Ding, 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 ding. All four. We've covered them all. So from there, what I wanted to look at, I really don't want to, this is a whole story on Gartner. I really didn't want to do that. I wanted to look at the Internet of Things, smart dust, and move it into nanotechnology. So there was a link in this story called Smart Dust. What is it used for? Connected air. Smart dust is the future of the quantified world. Set in the year of 2035. And this is, you know, this was all being done for the military, by the way. As a way of remote sensing, and you could spray it in the air and get an insight into what your enemies were doing on the ground. This is the year 2035, and Sergeant Bill Trisverse and his team of commandos are performing a sweeping clean operation through a portion of a war-torn city, and their job is to find any hidden pockets of resistance and flush them out and back through the neutral zone or eliminate them. And remember, in the future, those hidden pockets of resistance may be you and me. Says the drones that provide surveillance overhead cannot offer much support in the twisting alleys and passageways of the sprawling metropolis. And the helmet-based HUD systems that the soldiers are equipped with are useless in a city where all the technological infrastructure was destroyed years ago. But don't worry about it. He and his team use smart dust, portable packets of sensors that float through the air throughout the entire city and track movements, biometric indicators, temperature changes, and chemical composition of everything in their cities. The dust sensors send information back to their HUD displays on their heads through a communication receiver carried by a member of the team. And they can tell from the readings that the dust gives him if there are people around the next corner or if they are holding weapons. His team can then proceed accordingly. Smart dust, the sensors that track everything everywhere. Well, the idea of the Internet of Things is just so passe. Yes, I guess so. Just, it's so passe. Get used to it. We've already rolled it out, told you all about it, and now it just becomes part of your life. So no one's even concerned about it anymore. Let's just all plug ourselves into the Internet. Let's just all allow ourselves to be bagged and tagged, and it's not even now to the point of cellular or DNA level. We're talking like we started looking on Thursday about how they can identify you 100% for biometrics from your brain waves. And I got another story about that today that I want to look at. If we get there, it's already 10:30. I don't know how that happened. All right. So the Internet of Things is just so passe. Don't worry about it. It'll make your life easy. You can put your feet up. We'll take care of everything. The general concept of the Internet of Things is that we can put a sensor on anything and have it send data back to a database through the Internet. Ding, ding, that's exactly it. And then we can run algorithms on it. And in this way, we can monitor everything, everywhere, and build smarter systems that are more interactive than ever before. And yeah, the great part is, so let's feed all this data back to a database and then let's let the AI use that data, that new information that it just collected, to now come up with decisions or make things happen. That's the story we're going to look at next, is after we've collected all this data and we've turned it over to the machines, what happens with that? Putting sensors on stuff? Nah, boring. But what if the sensors were in the air? Everywhere. Oh, what a great freaking idea, DARPA. They could monitor everything. Temperature, humidity, chemical signatures, movements, brain waves, ding, and everything else. And this technology is called smart dust. And it is not quite as crazy or as new as you might think. Smart dust is a concept originated out of a research project by the United States Department of Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, and the Research and Development Corporation, RAND, in the early 1990s. Since we used the military antidote above, because these military research groups that first conceptualized smart dust were the ones, but the practical applications of the technology can be applied to almost any industry. Dust in the fields for monitoring crops, dust in the factories, monitoring the outputs of machines, dust in your body, monitoring your entire state of well-being, dust in the forest, tracking animal migration patterns, wind and humidity. The entire world could be quantified with this type of ubiquitous sensor technology. But how does it really work? See, that's what I'm saying. Like in the 90s, they already had this concept. They already were tinkering with building these things. I'm telling you, we'll dig into HP maybe tomorrow. I'll find some stories on their work on this. But this still, like I said, is the interim to the nanotechnology that they are working on now, which is what makes me think that this might, and they got so quiet about smart dust all within the early to mid 2000s, I don't remember hearing much of too much, and then a little bit back in like 2011, 2012, but it's been real quiet. typically when there's a lot of hype and it gets real quiet, it either means that it was a bust, and I know it wasn't, or that they've quietly let some kitty cats out of the bag and didn't tell you, but they'll tell you like nanotech in our food, oh, or GMO in the food supply back in the 1990s with the Flavor Saver tomato. You know what? I didn't find out about that until just last year. And that really wasn't out in any of the public domain. I don't remember any announcement. I don't remember anything. I just know the tomatoes bothered me in the 90s and I started getting allergies everywhere for no reason whatsoever. Anyway, don't get off topic, Joel. It's Monday. The entire world could be quantified with this type of ubiquitous sensor technology, but how does it really work? Well, what is smart dust? Smart dust is made of motes, little teeny tiny motes, which are tiny sensors that can perform a variety of functions. They're made of micro electromechanical systems. Of course, we just read about that, known as MEMS. And a single smart dust typically contains a semiconductor laser diode and MEMS beam steering mirror for active optical transmission and a MEMS corner cube retro reflector for passive optical transmission, an optical receiver, a signal processing and control circuitry, and a power source based on thick film batteries and solar cells. You know, with the technology and how it's improved since the 90s, I can guarantee you that it's way simpler than that now. That they probably have this teeny tiny little thing that's, you know, I don't even know. I don't even know. Like, I mean, can we even keep up on the technologies for all this stuff? Because I know it makes me dizzy, especially Monday morning and a half a cup of coffee. Smart dust is made capable by these MEMS, as well as advances in digital circuitry and wireless communication. Ding, ding. The advances in digital circuitry are what enable the motes to be so small while still having the ability to have a battery, a nominal amount of RAM, and a wireless transmitter likely powered by RFID, but perhaps Bluetooth. And the goal is to make the entire package as small as possible and last as long as possible while being able to support a microscopic operating system that enables the whole thing to run. Now, how freaky is this? You know, I was just thinking, too, they could always justify some of the cost on this as well as part of the space program. You know, take smart dust up and spew it all over Mars. We could be getting some real-time readings from the atmosphere up on the moon or something. And who knows if they haven't already done that? You know, it's all a big unknown. But I'm telling you, this stuff is real. Smart dust is absolutely real. I learned about this long before my days of digging into mad science come in. The challenges for smart dust are to create a package that includes all the elements needed to perform sensory measurements while also being able to communicate back to a base station to gather the data in real time. And solutions for optical transmission of data or using radio frequencies have been discussed by researchers at the University of California, Berkeley. One of the leading researchers and proponents of smart dust, and he was the co-founder of CTO and the CTO of Dust Networks, which is a company founded in 2004. So that must have been the spin-off from DARPA that they mentioned to bring concepts of smart dust to reality. And Linear Networks, which is a company that focuses on integrated circuits, was acquired by Dust Networks in 2011. So Dust Networks might be a company to do a little research into. So anybody out there who feels like they want to find some fun stuff to do today, Dust Networks, and maybe I, if I have some time later, I'll see if I can dig some stuff up on them. Controlling dust with tiny operating systems. Now, we've already talked about wearables. We spent a lot of time on Thursday, and a couple weeks back as well, we dedicated a whole show to the woman we love to hate, that Regina Duggan, former director of DARPA, who then went to go work for Google's ATAP Moonshots program, focused a lot on wearables. And we found out from the video that we heard on Thursday also superpowers, and her superpower was her electronic tattoo and her swallowable superpower pill to be utilized for authentication. We found out that they also had already spun that off. Its own little company, Proteus, where they are now spinning this for healthcare, not just for authenticating passwords to a secure room or your house, your car. She talked about all that, getting on the internet. No, this was for healthcare to be able to monitor real time inside your body. And all that stuff. All that stuff requires some sort of operating system. When she was at Google, there was a big push for Android, the Android wearable operating system. I don't know where that is. I haven't heard much about it, but there was a big hoopla when it was first released. And that was to be utilized in some of this Project Jacquard that she worked on, where they were interweaving sensors and antenna into material. And one of the projects they were working on was with Levi's, but now I know that there's many others. So that you could have actual smart fabric. You know, the military originally was working on that, and now they want to spin that out to all of us. We could have real-time 24/7 wearable smart clothes. And I'm sorry, but I am not going to wear Under Armour smart underwear. And you know what? One of my friends said that they've used their products before, and they're very uncomfortable. Not the smart ones, but the stretchy ones, they're not very comfortable. They're actually for athletes and stuff, but no smart underwear for me. Anyway, controlling dust with tiny operating systems. Back to the story. So if a developer is working with a mix of open source hardware and software, there's a good chance that he or she is working within one of two operating platforms. One is called Arduino, and the other one is called TinyOS, which that's the first I've heard of that. That's kind of cute. That's a cute little name. Look at it. TinyOS. Yeah, the TinyOS is going to monitor, beg, and tag you. It's not that cute. It's like a rabid little chipmunk. The primary difference between Arduino and TinyOS is that the latter is designed for much lower powered sensors that support wireless communication standards. Arduino is much easier for a developer to learn and use, but TinyOS provides a much fuller feature set. Hence, TinyOS is almost perfectly designed to run the smart dust motes. TinyOS's primary drawbacks is that it cannot run functions that are heavily processor intensive, so we won't be able to run supercomputing smart dust networks, apparently. And while TinyOS is a full-featured operating system, its purpose is very defined. It runs code in very short snippets to perform a singular function, as opposed to running long strings to perform complex actions. So it almost sounds to me like in the old days of Windows operating system versus Mac, we had Windows was a CISC operating system. Actually, it was a CISC chip, a processor complex instruction set, versus the Apple processor, which was a RISC, the reduced instruction set computer, and it was much faster. That's why Macs of the old Apple computing of the old days was always much faster than a PC, was because they didn't need all these long strings. It was short and sweet. And the RISC chips that Motorola made for Apple were super fast. All right, anyway, blah, blah, blah. There's like two more paragraphs here. Creating more advanced ways of conducting war has given humanity some of its biggest technological breakthroughs. And yes, that conducting war, that's what DARPA's all about. And that is their mission, is to find more advanced ways to conduct war. And then they're like, what? Hey, then we give it to everybody and the whole world gets to improve or destroy themselves because of it. Nuclear power, jet engines, radar, and even the foundation of the internet have been researched, developed, and inspired by military focus groups. And dust sprung from this as well, but it is by no means limited to military actions. With respect to the future, the scenario in which researchers and the people at the universities use dust will hopefully never come to be. It is just much more fascinating to imagine planetary exploration using dust to monitor the environmental conditions of potentially habitable worlds. And there you go. That's what I said. Maybe they take it to Mars. Maybe they already did. Or it's even more exciting to monitor the inner processes of the human brain. Did they really say that? I think they did. But don't worry about it, because Kurzweil's got better plans for nanobots. It says, Pfister and Kahn, two of these researchers, elaborate on some potential uses in their research paper on the potential of smart dust. Quote, smart dust may be deployed over a region to record data for meteorological, geophysical, or planetary research. It may also be employed to perform measurements in an environment where wired sensors are unusable or lead to measurement errors. Examples include instrumentation of semiconductor processing chambers, rotating machinery, wind chambers, and anechoic chambers. And in biological research, smart dust may be used to monitor movements and internal processes of insects or other small animals. So you know that some poor cockroach, we already found out they got injected with nanoparticles. Well, sounds like a poor cockroach probably was the first line of testing for some of the smart dust as well. All right, so there was a story then that came out of TechCrunch that I ran across last week. A lot of it's mumbo-jumbo here, talking about it's a lot of stuff that we've talked about before, collective mind, AI, some of the dangers we've discussed. The coming of AI and self-learning robots, I mean, that's pretty well established. They have them now able to learn a brand new job overnight, right? We saw that a couple weeks ago. They can use their visual processing units now to be able to learn a task. Google has been teaching, they started out teaching their AI with cat videos on YouTube. But now they're doing all kinds of stuff. And they have actual robots, Baxter, we read about, who's able to connect to the cloud and use this swarm learning. One Baxter learns and uploads to the cloud, and all the other Baxters now have access to that learning. So anyway, to the story, AI is not a threat to humanity, so they say, but an internet of smart things may be. After more than 60 years of its conceptual inception, and after too many hype-generating moments, AI is yet again making its presence felt in the mainstream media. And, you know, what gets me is this now is the second publication that I've seen in the last few days that's saying, oh, yeah, we know all this stuff's been hyped before. So just go back to sleep, because this isn't important. You know, it's again, it's people making it big, and it's not, but it is, guys. This time it is. Technology has made it to where we need to be. Technology is now working beyond exponentially. And, it's not gonna be too long. It says, what is clear for the time being, so many questions still remain. What is an accurate definition of intelligence? And what are the implications of combining the Internet of Things with intelligence? Ding, ding, ding. Well, the implications are your worst nightmare that you could ever imagine. In simpler terms, intelligence can be defined as doing the right thing at the right time in a flexible manner that helps you survive proactively and improve productivity in various facets of life. There are various forms of intelligence. There's the more rational variety that is necessitated for intellectually demanding tasks like playing chess or solving complex problems or making discerning choices about the future. There's also the concept of social intelligence. that is characterized by courteous social behavior. And, you know, that came up last night in chat. That is what they are doing right now, utilizing all of the stats and the data that they're collecting on a second-by-second basis out of social media. They're running experiments and they're running algorithms on how we interact socially, our social intelligence. And don't think that they are not feeding that into the machine as a learning tool, because they absolutely are. And like this says, social intelligence, that is another form of intelligence, and they're trying to teach that to the machine. Then, of course, there's the other one, and this one might be difficult, but they want to teach this one as well, and at least they're giving them facial expressions, and that is emotional intelligence, which is about being empathetic toward the emotions and thoughts of the people with whom you engage. And remember, we dug into psychopathy and that narcissistic psychopathic disorder. Emotional intelligence is where the damage was when they were children. But I'll tell you, emotional intelligence is very important. You know, just by typing a message versus speaking to someone, there is emotion that is portrayed in the inflection and intonation in your voice, by the expressions on your face. So if someone can hear you and not see you, there also could be a misinterpretation. By your body language, you know, people like me who have a real hard time playing poker because it's always giving it away on my face. You know, I'm thinking one thing, I'm expressing another. Since we generally experience each of these contours of intelligence in some combination, but that does not mean that they cannot be comprehended independently, perhaps even creatively within the context of AI. And most human behaviors are essentially instincts or reactions to outward stimuli, and that is absolutely true. We generally don't think we need to be intelligent to execute them. And in reality, our brains are wired smartly to perform these tasks, and most of what we do is reflexive and automatic, in that we sometimes don't even need to be conscious of the processes, but our brain is always processing, assimilating, analyzing, and implementing instructions, which are very difficult things to program a robot to do. But don't worry about that, because the superiority of the collective mind is coming. In the recently deceased Marvin Minsky, who is the godfather of artificial intelligence, talked about the society of the mind, where cognitive processes and cognitive architecture is not confined to one place and is not an isolated process. It is the collective behavior of many subtly ingrained concepts that our minds are capable of. And while this is not a new concept in the domain of AI, it assumes great significance, given that our brains are massively complex networks of 190 billion neurons that are in constant communication with each other. And you know, the other day when we actually all last week dug into the brain, one of the things we looked at was being able to connect brains together. They already are working on some of that research. Michio Kaku had talked about that one experiment, and I thought we covered that experiment, where they were able to send messages between two brains that were connected on the other side of the world via the internet. You know, they're already working with this as well with Baxter and doing cloud learning. And we've heard Ray Kurzweil talk about, finally, we'll be able to upload ourselves and download ourselves and collective think. This is all about the Borg. The Borg. It's a supercomputer of human brains is what they are looking at as part of this future of ours, where we're all in the cloud and we all can be utilized and we all can think together and we all can solve the world's biggest problems. So the dangers of combining the Internet of Things with collective thinking, well, who would have thunk it? This links surprisingly well with the emergence of the Internet of Things, which has accompanied promising new opportunities, but it has also paved the way for a number of additional threats. We are creating new complex networks and interconnected devices that can share infinite amounts of information
And in conjunction with appropriate AI architectures and optimized machine learning models, this situation may eventually lead to an accurate imitation of the human brain on a much bigger scale. And so I'm talking about like Borg hive think. And I, the author, am not just speaking about traditional artificial neural networks. I'm proposing that under the garb of the Internet of Things, we may start creating intricate networks of machinery that are intelligent enough to start understanding things as inexplicable as human irrationality and human dependence on machines. And that is true. You know, as they make us interact daily with smart cars that have cameras that are monitoring our behavioral patterns and looking at our facial expressions and feeling or sensing our biometric systems, our heart rates and our breathing rates, and making their own decisions about what type of mood we're in. When we have smart sensors in our homes that are tracking us 24/7 and algorithms that are running our voice patterns and being able to distinguish what we're saying and in the context of what we're saying and what our emotions are, we have all of these behavioral monitoring algorithms that we've talked about, they'll be able to tell whether or not 2 weeks from now you're going to be depressed by the way you're acting, the way you're talking in the future, right? We saw that the last week. It's pretty scary once all these smart devices get together and start sharing information independently about you. What's going to happen? Will they revolt? Will they decide that you might be a danger to them? It says, we may start creating intricate networks of machinery that are intelligent enough to start understanding things as inexplicable as human irrationality and humans' dependence on machines. The fear does not arise from building humanoid robots, because 99.99% of the real-world problems do not require an android body. So, no, don't worry, Atlas. We're just going to integrate you. For example, the intelligent driverless car does not require a humanoid robot that gets into the car and drives it. However, the intelligent connected car can certainly collect a lot of useful information about those using it, whether it is their patterns, their behaviors, their preferences, or coordination with other intelligent devices such as seatbelts or other automotive gadgets. And once these traits get imbibed in a pattern that then renders them smart, there is no reason why humans would not be enamored and eventually enslaved by such machines. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, I'm enslaved by my car. This is just, I don't even know what to say. We're going to be enslaved by smart modes. Oh, a case in point is the ubiquitous obsessive behavioral patterns when it comes to smartphone usage, a phenomenon that has assumed alarming proportions. Yes, the dopamine button, bzz, 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 bzz. The Internet of Things is likely to actually exacerbate this problem. So this is this obsessive, psychopathic need to be connected. And incorporating AI into the Internet of Things to create an Internet of Smart Things may lead to some seriously unpleasant outcomes. But will we design our own executioner? Well, that's a good question. Despite being fully cognizant about our unpredictability, we are adept at taking strategic shortcuts at appropriate times, which makes it abundantly clear that our ecological smartness and creativity has gotten us to where we are now. But yes, humans can be stupid. AI, like other forms of modern technology, can go on to become incredibly beneficial or incredibly dangerous. And as responsible developers of technology, we may want to ensure that our comfort-driven instincts do not take precedence over our larger commitments to make sure that we do not get usurped and that human 1.0 continues. All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, that was like the fastest hour yet. Make sure you stick around because it is Monday. It's Money Breakfast Live.
Every square inch of every city will be alive with intelligence. Because every street and every building will have a network of microcomputers built right into them. Dr. Chris Pister calls it smart dust.
A smart dust particle or mote is a wireless sensor with sensing, computation, communication, and power in one package.
These all-in-one microcomputers will be small, very small.
The size of a mote today is about the size of a grain of rice. And we've shown that we can make the circuitry small enough and light enough that eventually it will be possible to make things that are on a sub-millimeter size scale.
Tiny specks of computer smart dust will form a vast invisible network that can help manage the infrastructure of even the largest city.
Smart cities in the future will take this low-power, inexpensive, small technology and basically distributed everywhere.
These tiny computers record information about their surroundings, information they can send to other computers or to you. Smart dust on the tracks will monitor your commuter train so you know if it's running late. Potholes will be able to report themselves and warn your car, and you'll never have to wait for a radio traffic report again.
They're monitoring the flow of traffic and giving you alerts about what route is the right way to go to keep the traffic moving.
Bridges will get a coating of smart dust particles that can warn us when they detect stress fractures, helping avoid deadly collapses. But smart dust will also allow buildings and streets to recognize you and respond accordingly.
I think increasingly the environment will respond to who we are and adapt in consequence.
The city will know where you are if you want it to.
Your workplace will know you. Smart dust at the entrance will boot up your computer. And smart dust embedded in the elevator doors will automatically ring your floor.
Smart dust is going to sense the environment and allow us to improve the way that we live our lives.